Editorial note. Despite my understandable reluctance to resort to this secondary source again, I'm afraid it's necessary to fill a gap in Kane's narrative, which breaks off at this point only to resume after some time has passed. No doubt he felt nothing of significance had occurred in the interim, despite the passage of several hours. As ever, my apologies for the style, or lack of it, and my assurance that readers with a refined appreciation for the Gothic language are perfectly at liberty to skip it. It is, however, mercifully short. Extracted from Like a Phoenix from the Flames, The Founding of the 597th, by General Jennet Suller, retired, 097, M42.
Vital as the task with which we had been entrusted undeniably was, it could hardly be described as challenging. Once the miners had directed Captain Federer's sappers to the part of the workings where the flaws and stresses in the ice ensured our planned booby trap would work to best effect, there was little for us more practical soldiers to do other than fan out through the galleries to secure our perimeter against the remote possibility of infiltration by the orcs. This we did, and although I have to admit that the task was a tedious one, to the credit of the women and men under my command, they remained as alert after half the day had crawled by as they had at the commencement of our vigil. This was disturbed at length by a vox message from deep in the lower galleries, so attenuated by the layers of intervening ice that I could scarcely discern it, and a moment's perusal of the tactical slate was enough to confirm what I'd already deduced. The source of the message was far deeper than the most far-flung of our patrols. There could be only one explanation, and taking my command squad with me, I made haste to respond, finding as we descended and the vox signal became clearer that my suspicions were correct. This was indeed a message from none other than Commissar Kane himself, returning with news of dire import, and demanding, as soon as communications became reliable enough, to be put through to Colonel Castine at once. While my vox operator made haste to comply, his powerful backpack transmitter easily able to boost the tenuous signals of the Commissar's combeed, I directed my troopers to his aid as rapidly as I could. Though the conversation had moved to a command frequency of a far higher level than those to which I, as a lowly lieutenant, had access, it was clear from the urgent tone of his voice that the tidings he brought were of such importance they must be disseminated as rapidly as possible. The carrier wave was enough to lead us to the Commissar's party, however, and I must confess to a moment of shock as I beheld the bedraggled survivors of what must surely have been a journey of epic endurance. Commissar Kane was, of course, the very picture of martial heroism he always presented, his bearing erect and eye steady, undaunted by whatever horrors he had faced, although his companions all too clearly showed the terrible ravages of the perils they'd fought their way through. The Commissar's aide, in particular, looked as though he had come through hell, dishevelled in a way I had seldom seen in a trooper still living.
1. Suller has clearly had little prior contact with Jürgen.
The other soldiers with him stumbled with exhaustion, horror written across their faces, and only the tech priest at the rear of the party appeared to be in good spirits, doubtless because his augmentations had protected him from whatever had so afflicted the others. "Help them," I ordered, and my troopers made haste to obey, providing much-needed support for all. It was only after I'd spoken that the Commissar appeared to recognize me, looking in my direction for the first time, and I must confess to an overwhelming sensation of pride as he spoke my name, quite overcome at the confidence he so evidently had in my qualities as an officer. "Sulla," he said, in a voice clearly meant for no ears other than his own. "Of course, who else would it be?"